Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and our theme today is defining style. Each of my guests will tell us how they define style in what they do. My first guest defined musical style during the British invasion in the 1960s. He pioneered a sound that set Herman's Hermits apart from other British rock bands. That style has an enduring legacy even today. My second guest defines styles in what we see in retail stores across the nation. She's an expert on what products make it into stores and which products don't, a de facto arbitrator of style. My third guest shows her style by tackling an issue most teenagers wouldn't think about, the food and the drink that they consume. She's conducted research on energy drinks and the impact these drinks have on teens. Her work has won her a scholarship to college. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 805-639-0008. Peter Noon is a multi-talented entertainer. He's been delighting audiences nearly all of his life. He was born in Manchester, England. And, belatedly, we're going to wish him a happy birthday because he just celebrated another birthday. As a child, he starred as Stanley Fairlow in the long-running British soap opera, Coronation Street. At the age of 15, he was tapped and he achieved international fame as Herman, the lead singer of the legendary 60s pop band Herman's Hermits. Their songs include I'm Into Something Good, Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, I'm Henry the Eighth I Am, Silhouettes, and on they go. There are many, many more. Herman's Hermits sold over 60 million recordings. He's been on television. Many of you might remember him as VH1's host of My Generation. And now he joins us here today on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Peter, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great, Billy the Brain. How are you doing?
I am terrific. Thank you, and happy birthday to you. A little bit late, but congratulations nonetheless.
That's all right. Better get a late birthday wish than no birthday wish at all.
It does beat the alternative, doesn't it? Well, you're out there. You're still performing, and which I think is a marvelous thing. In fact, you've got a gig coming up at the Canyon Club in Agoura Hills on November the 17th. So you're going to be right here in our neighborhood. But I want to go back to the beginning, if we can, for just a minute, and talk a little bit about Herman's Hermits. How did you become the front man for Herman's Hermits?
Well, I became the front man because I think everybody believed that I was talking sense. I had no idea what I was doing, but I found four or five people who were so stupid and light-witted that they thought I had a plan, even though I didn't have one, and they trusted me. And I said, you have to give up your day jobs. And one of them was a civil engineer in university, and I was 15, and I made these four or five guys quit their jobs and concentrate on creating a band. And we created this band called Herman's Hermits, and we believed we were totally unique because we didn't do Billy. Everybody in those days had to be totally different from each other. You know, the Beatles weren't like the Stones,
right?
And the Stones weren't like Herman's Hermits, and Herman's Hermits weren't like the Beatles or the Stones or the Who. We were all completely unique, and our uniqueness was that we did songs that nobody else would do. And we did songs like Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. And I chose early on not to be one of those English guys who faked an American accent like the Stones and the, you know,
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
And the Beatles. Everybody was kind of copied, pretending to be American when they sang. So I decided I would stay to be English.
And I think that was brilliant.
I think it was a good choice because then the British invasion happened and we were the Beatles' interviews were far more entertaining than ours, but our records, we kept the same accent as our real-life voices, you know.
And so you were more recognizable when you were being interviewed on shows like this.
Well, I think the girls thought it was more charming because then, you know, they felt that the record was talking with my own voice, which it really was. And I truly, it's sort of Stanislavski-esque, you know, I truly believed those characters that I sang as. I didn't believe I was Henry VIII. But, you know, I did believe that Mrs. Brown had a lovely daughter. You know, he's got a lovely daughter. I truly believed it.
I think that it's great. Now, Peter, how did the band get its distinctive name? Because that's a fun story in and of itself.
We used to rehearse in this public house in England, the pub. You know, we were too young to drink in a pub, but we could rehearse in it when it was closed. And as you know, English pubs used to be closed all day, so people used to go in there and slam like 30 drinks down before they closed. But this one, we would rehearse in there, and we agreed that part of the payment for the rehearsal space was to do one free concert a week there. And we were rehearsing, and the guy who owned the pub, who sadly I can't remember his name, but maybe one of the other hermits will, what happened? I got dressed up and I came out, and he goes, who are you supposed to be? And I had these horn-rimmed glasses on.
Mm-hmm.
And we were singing, you know, That'll Be the Day. And he said, who are you doing? Who's that? And I said, that's Buddy Holly. And he said, you don't look like Buddy Holly. You look like Herman from the Bullwinkle Show. And he meant Sherman from the Bullwinkle
right.
Show. But he went with Herman because that was a cute idea. What a great name for the band, Herman and the... And he says, well, Herman and the Bloody Hermits. You look like Hermit. There and then, one guy who never got a credit invented the name of the band.
Oh, that's brilliant. What a fun story. Peter, your fans are totally loyal and faithful to you. In fact, they've got a nickname known as the Nunatics, and I've got one of those Nunatics on the phone right now. Cheryl is calling in. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes,
Mom.
I am.
Hi, do you have a question for Peter?
Hi, I just wanted to say hi, and I saw you in Omaha, Nebraska in 1968 with The Who. It was so awesome.
Yes.
It was the very first concert I went to.
I've
been a Herman fan all of this time.
Good for you, Cheryl. You've obviously got very good taste. I remember the concert, and I remember Omaha, because one of the kids in the concert was Warren Buffett.
Oh, really?
I
in
made that
Omaha.
Up.
Oh, my gosh. How wonderful. Thank you.
Nice, good talking to you, Cheryl.
You take care. God bless you.
Cheryl, thanks so much for the call. That is great. Wow, how heartwarming is that? What a great reach out for Cheryl. Thanks, Cheryl, for calling in. Now, I got to ask you, Peter, you did set the style for Herman's Hermits, and I think it was you, the brains behind really setting that distinctive style, weren't you? Even at 15, you had pretty good business acumen to know that you wanted to have that distinctive sound. How did the other British rock bands sort of view Herman's Hermits at that time?
Well, nobody, you know, it's hard to explain. You know, all those people in all those groups, like the Kinks and the Who and the Beatles and the Stones, we all knew each other. England is a very small place. England is about as big as Ventura County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a small, small country. So we used to see the Stones, like, every week. We'd either see them in, like, some place that we all stopped on the motorway, the freeway, to get gas. Or we, you know, we all knew each other, but we were not competitive. We didn't compete. There was no, you know, we were not like each other. Everybody was totally unique. The ones who weren't unique are the ones you never heard of. They were too like the Beatles.
I see.
There was already a Beatles. There was already a Stones. There was already a, do you know what I mean? So we were all kind of friends. I mean, I used to get a ride from the Stones back to London in their car, and I used to. Oh, you know, John Lennon used to take me out drinking because I was too young to drink. He would get the two Bacardis and I'd get the two sodas. we were all comrades. It was like it was as if we were just a bunch of plumbers. Only we were in a convention, and it was not a plumbers convention. It was a rock star convention, and we all knew each other. And the two youngest people in the whole business were the people. We were the people that they all took care of, made sure we didn't get in trouble, because it was kind of like, for example, the Beatles, when Herman's Hermits finished, when we broke up, we were about the same age as when the Beatles met each other.
Ah.
Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
We did all this stuff. We were kids. And because we were kids, people were protective of us. You know, people were very kind to us. You know, the Beatles loaned us gear. You know, the Who we loaned the Who our gear, so they had some more gear to break.
Wow.
It was just one of those, it was a great period of non-competitive musical. And, you know, once you turn it into a talent competition, the whole spirit goes out of it. You know what I mean? It's like, but I'm going to tell you a story. There was this competition near Liverpool in a place called Warrington.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Battle of the Beats or something. You know, the best beat group competition.
Right.
And the Beatles came second to a band called the Cartwrights.
They came in second? How about that?
You remember the Cartwrights, right? You remember the Cartwrights?
No, not top of my list.
So there you go. So that just proves that, you know, because really the people who were judging the competition weren't people who, you know, it should have been judged by a bunch of 14-year-old girls.
Exactly.
But it wasn't. It was the judges were 60-year-old men who hadn't bought a record for 30 years, and that was a Perry Como record. So, you know what I mean? So,
I do.
So we were, that whole period is should be remembered for the period when the people who joined in the competition failed because there was already, if there were two people doing the same thing, there was not enough space then.
Got it.
Every single British Invasion band is totally unique. Think about it. The Kinks are not like the Stones or the Beatles.
Right.
And Herman's Hermits are not like the Searchers or Gerry and the Pacemakers, all of these. We were all unique, you know, and that is, that's what's different now. It's hard when you put on the radio, you don't know if it's Maroon 5 or some, you're not quite sure because it sounds a bit like, you know, and that's what's happened. It's become everybody's competing for the same turf.
I say, well,
it's competition.
It's good to hear that it was such a collegial environment. Everybody was so close at that time. You normally think of the bands being competitive, especially when they hit the charts, both in Britain and the United States. We're talking to Peter Noone, everybody. Peter, Herman's Hermits, amazing record, 60 million recordings. What an accomplishment that is. If you had to pick a signature Herman's Hermits song, what would that be?
I think I'm Into Something Good because it captures that moment in history where enthusiasm was the most replaced eloquence. You know,
Oh, and we're playing that in the background as you speak, Peter, because it's one of my personal favorites as well.
Yeah. Woke up this morning feeling fine. There's something special on my mind. Last night I met a new girl in the neighborhood. Whoa, yeah. Something tells me I'm into something good.
What a great song, and it absolutely captures youthful enthusiasm, doesn't it, Peter?
Yeah, you know, it's like a bunch of boys, 15, I think I was 15 when I made the record, and it, you know, it just has that magical pop thing, you know, of popular songs, like the song you want to hear when you wake up in the morning on the radio, you know?
Exactly.
You don't want to hear, you know, that there were two songs, like there was like The Eve of Destruction, and there was I'm Into Something Good, and I won. I was right.
Well, absolutely you were. I think in the long run, people will remember I'm Into Something Good more than they'll remember Eve of Destruction. We have another caller on the line? No. Okay. Well, back to you, Peter. Herman's Hermits had the distinction of appearing on the Ed Sullivan Show, which you were just amazing on the Ed Sullivan Show. What do you remember as a 15, 16-year-old about appearing on Ed Sullivan's show as a teenager?
Well, first of all, he was a real gent, and I liked that. You know, because we had those similar type of people in England were the people who presented the English shows. You know, those sort of journalistic more than... for example, let me say, what I liked about Ed Sullivan was he didn't try to join in, if you know what I mean. He didn't like, well, let me sing a song with the band or let me do a trick with the magician.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice now, everybody piles in, you know, and once upon a time, there were those people who did these wonderful, like, outside bits. He was a journalist. He announced Herman's Hermits. I went to Mass with him. He liked Herman's Hermits. He said, you're a Catholic, aren't you? And I go, yeah, yeah. He said, meet me tomorrow morning. We'll go to St. Patrick's Mass.
Did you?
I thought it was very, very nice, you know, because I wore the suit and tie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was one of, he was somebody I was respectful and respectable. And he hadn't seen a lot of that from those English fans. So, no, seriously, you know, because we all, you know, remember that the people who presented music made fun of pop music. They even made fun of Elvis Presley, you know what I mean, who is one of the greatest performers and singers of his generation.
Right.
Maybe, you know, rock and roll singer of all time. But he was made fun of. So we went there most of the time. We made fun of him. But he was respectable. He respected Herman so much. He said, what are you doing this time? You know, what would you like to sing for us? You know, it wasn't these idiots from England, another bloody British band coming over here to steal our girls. He didn't have that attitude.
Which I think is good, yeah.
Yeah, we liked him. He was an intelligent guy. He liked to see drinks, so we immediately connected to him. And, you know, we had a great time. He invited us often. You know, whenever we had a new record out, he was always the first person, well, come on my show when you got the new record out. He would sometimes say they're coming back next month when we were going to be in China or somewhere on tour. You know, he was kind of like, I think he appreciated Herman so much because we were gentlemen. We knew how to say yes, sir.
Which I think is a great thing for a bunch of teenagers. I think it really sets you apart. I think that that's great. We're talking to Peter Noone, everybody. Peter, you know, at a time when others might consider slowing down, you're still out there touring. In fact, I mentioned it at the top of the hour that you are going to be here in Agoura Hills at the Canyon Club on November the 27th. What keeps you going?
I still have 27 years left on my mortgage. It's just a joke. I think it's 26. But, you know what? I didn't know. I say this a lot. I said it to my, I had some friends stay and came over from France, and I say, and I asked a question, and when you were 20 and you looked at 62-year-old or, you know, people in their 60s, they were kind of old people. And I didn't know you would feel so good when I was this age. I feel really good. I think I feel probably better than I've ever felt in my life, which is really strange. I know I could sing better now than I could when I was 16 or 17.
Really?
And I made all those records. Yeah. You know, because I didn't take any lessons when I was 16 or 17. I was totally young. I didn't want to. But now I took lessons so that I wouldn't get a sore throat on stage and I would be able to do more concerts. You know, when I was doing Pirates of Penzance on Broadway, it's 8 shows a week. So you learn to take care of your, you know, like a pitcher. If you're a pitcher, you know, you need to give yourself days off from the game and warm up your arm before you throw the fastball, you know, all that stuff. So I learned how to take care of myself. And truthfully, I did 100 concerts this year.
My goodness.
Each one was more fun than the last. I have trouble remembering. Sometimes on stage I come up and I say, I didn't hit my game, you know what I mean? And everyone said, no, you're wrong. That was probably one of the best shows you've done this year. So, you know, I still have this amazing sort of Panglossian, naive enjoyment out of the whole thing, and the fact that I can still sing I'm Henry VIII, I am, and look in the audience and see 100% of the people singing along.
And they all know the words. Peter, we're going to have to leave it there. You're an absolute delight. You're coming to the Canyon Club here in Agoura Hills on the 27th. If people want to get tickets, they can just contact the Canyon Club directly. Peter, thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
You take care, Billy. It's always good talking to you.
Great talking to you, Peter. Take care. And we'll be back after this short break.
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am. I got married to the widow next door.